You're listening to The Portfolio Doctors on ESPN 1700. Your financial future depends on making sound investment decisions. Make sure you get accurate information and a weekly checkup from a source you can trust, Portfolio Doctors. Now, live in studio, here's Dan Osgood and Steve Bick, The Portfolio Doctors.
Hi, welcome. It is The Portfolio Doctors. I am Dan Osgood.
I'm Steve Bick.
Welcome to another edition, although this will be a slightly modified version, something about the Padres needing some airtime that's going to impact our show today, but as long as they win, we'll
accept they're more important than us.
I think depends on how you look at it. I guess there's probably some fanatical fans that feel they're more important than we are, but we'll do our best to teach you otherwise. The markets today, pretty substantial sell-off for the NASDAQ, for sure. The Dow, it's a big number, but percentage-wise, it's not
so significant. Everything else was about 1% down, but certainly the NASDAQ, that was down close to 3%, which is pretty substantial. It was led by the more momentum players like Tesla and Facebook and all of those.
The ones that have become the bigger impact players on the index.
Exactly right.
That, again, skews when you're looking at the index the way they track them. If one of the big players is up or down significantly, it plays a big role in the overall.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, you had pretty much across the board, everything was pretty much down, other than gold, of course, but everything in the NASDAQ was pretty beaten up.
Yes. Well, you bring up a pretty good point. Maybe we're getting to more normal. We've seen this a little bit so far this year that the things that are supposed to go up when other things go down are actually behaving that way a little bit more this year, where over the last few years, everything went up, everything went down, everything went sideways altogether, and that's not how normal markets are supposed to work.
Yeah. It's at this point we've had, I don't know, what is a normal market anymore?
Right.
Because, really, if you think all the way back to 2007 – and then we had the meltdown. I still haven't felt like anything's really acted or behaved normally since then.
And that's what I was kind of getting at. It seems like this year so far, it's closer to what used to be the normal in the behavior, that when the stocks are going up, bonds are going down and vice versa.
I understand what you're saying, but it's just, it's funny because, you or I or anyone out there, if you manipulate the markets to any degree, that would be it. You'd be spending some time behind bars and that. But it's funny because the Federal Reserve can just manipulate as much as they want. And that's really why there's a feeling that it's not a normal market, because they're constantly pressing buttons to try and stimulate, not necessarily, they say they're trying to stimulate the economy, but essentially the buttons they're pressing are stimulating basically one thing, and that's a stock exchange.
Stock exchange, which is benefiting the big business, which...
That's the theory, the trickle-down effect, right? And the idea is that the rich get richer, and then that trickles down, and they start employing people. But we haven't seen it this time. We really have not. And that's the problem, where unemployment's, the numbers came out today. They weren't too bad, I didn't think.
No, it really was the private sector primarily where this was. There was no government job growth. It was all... Non-farm payrolls increased 192,000 jobs last month, and that is backing up 197,000 job increase in February. So the unemployment rate overall is unchanged, which unchanged is probably better than moving up a little bit, obviously.
Correct. That isn't bad, but, you've still got a massive pool of unemployed or underemployed people.
Right.
That's sitting well over 12%, almost at 13%, and so... There's still a ton of people out there that are looking or would like to have a permanent job that are working in a part-time position.
Yeah.
So you haven't solved that problem.
One of the quotes I saw that I think is pretty dead on, it says these numbers, they call them Goldilocks numbers, meaning they're decent but not so good that it gets fears going about interest rates or the economy growing too quickly. Because although economic growth is great, if it starts accelerating too fast, that creates its own set of problems.
Well, yeah, but they haven't managed to do much at this point, have they?
No.
We were talking earlier, 2008, so what's that? 6-7 years we're into this, and we haven't really got anywhere other than we've got a massive debt and on the balance sheets, or you know, on the Federal Reserve balance sheets, and a government that continues to spend more money than we need. I mean, as I was, you know, listening today to an interview, and as the one guy correctly said, he goes, you know, you can't keep borrowing money forever, and that's right. Essentially what this economy is doing.
And I mean, Janet Yellen, everyone was giving her a hard time and saying that was poor leadership, with her kind of almost giving a timeline on when they might start considering raising rates. Mm-hmm. In that same statement, she kind of left the door open to, we may stop the taper altogether. And
I can't see how they can't stop the taper.
At some point,
to keep going with that.
Because it seems like every time there's enough news to look like it's good economic news, that starts putting the fears of, uh-oh, they're just going to stop this altogether, you see the markets start to roll over and start dropping, and that seems to put shockwaves back through the Fed, and they go, yeah. Oh, wait, let's retract our last statement.
Yeah, exactly right. And then they go back to printing more money. And the other problem is, as we've discussed on the show in the past, is there's a lot of the fast money moved offshore, overseas, to the BRIC nations. You know, their economies were booming while ours was still struggling along. But now you've got a situation where, you know, we're pulling a lot of that money out, and now they're struggling, mm-hmm. you know. And yeah. That was the growth of the global. Global growth was coming out of the BRIC countries.
Yeah. Although here just recently, Brazil, which got pretty well beat up over the last year,
yep.
it's been rebounding
yeah, it has.
Quite nicely.
Well, that was your play on the Olympics and the World Cup soccer.
Maybe those events are getting close enough, because what's first? World Cup
soccer is coming up soon. In about 2 months.
So that it could just be a little bit of excitement about that event coming soon.
I don't know.
It'll be interesting.
I do know that they're nuts about soccer, so you could be right.
Brazil?
Yeah.
They like soccer?
If they don't win World Cup, I'll be very surprised.
It'll be bad if they lose or if they win, because it is in Brazil. They'll be rioting in the streets, I'm pretty sure, good
well,
and bad.
Right.
So it's definitely interesting. Let's make a quick switch of gears. The middle class, we've talked about this numerous times now.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of doing away with the middle class, all the different actions that have been going on in the government.
I don't think you ever want to do away with it. I mean, the idea is that you should have a nice, strong middle class, because it, A, creates a buffer between the haves and have-nots. B, they spread the wealth around more evenly. And C, it gives people more hope that they can actually take a step up the ladder. And so it really is the middle class that holds the whole thing together. And also, they produce the majority of your tax revenues. Because the middle class people don't really have the money to go out there and spend heaps of dollars on weird and wonderful tax hiding schemes.
Right.
But the middle class, you're right, is shrinking. It's being squeezed, and it's being squeezed with money being taken out of your pockets for taxes and for health care and for employee benefits and.
Right.
And so it's just getting squeezed more and more.
In normal economies, middle class should ultimately be the largest class, correct?
Not necessarily the largest class, but you would like that, but at least a significant portion of it.
Because, mm-hmm. yeah. I mean, the upper class is always going to be a relatively small percentage
small.
Of the population.
Yep. Right.
Lower class, you would like to have that be a relatively small number and try to fit as many people as possible into that middle class.
Correct.
Because those are people that are able to lead a pretty comfortable life.
Yeah, and in a country like the U.S., you would hope, being the economy of the globe in terms of the size, and also being the most developed, probably the most developed, right. or one of the most developed countries in the globe, that there's access to education, there's access to training, there's access to all of these opportunities. So you would expect to see a relatively small, or hopefully shrinking, lower class, and, as you say, a burgeoning middle class, but that's not happening right now.
Right. And it just seems like it's accelerating, that they're slowly whittling away at the number of people that are fitting in, although it is a pretty wide open ultimate guesstimate of where does the middle class start and where does it end, because
Correct.
There's never been a defined, this is what it
well,
is.
Well, it's really hard, because if you're living in, let's say, Oklahoma, mm-hmm. and you're earning $100,000 a year, you're middle class for sure. I mean, there's not many people making that type mm-hmm. of money. you come out to California, San Diego, you know, 100 grand, that's not a bad salary, but you're probably not really middle class yet because you're still going to struggle to feed yourself and buy a house and, you know, because it's just so expensive here. Mm-hmm. So the cost of living adjustment is so big that if you take a blanket and put it over the whole country, what is middle class?
Yeah, where do you draw the lines?
And I mean, they talk about $250,000, which is a great amount of money. But, you know, $250,000 in California is not that much. It's a lot, but it's fantastic.
You're in the upper probably 1 or 2% of all wage earners
across
the country. And think about that. If you live here in California, you're making that. How
difficult.
Well,
they're going to take half of it away for taxes to begin with.
It doesn't help that our governor recently upped the amount of money we pay in taxes each year, regardless of what tax bracket you fall into. Well, stick around. When we come back, we will further educate you as to why you should listen to us rather than the Padres. Welcome back. It's the Portfolio Doctors. I am Dan Osgood.
I'm Steve Bick.
And if anything we're ever talking about kind of strikes a chord with you and you would like to either find out more information or if there's a topic you'd like us to cover, definitely reach out to us. You can reach me directly via email, dan@theportfoliodoctors.com. You can contact steve@theportfoliodoctors.com. Or just go to our website. You can jot your name and email down there. We'll respond back to you. That is theportfoliodoctors.com. We'd love to hear from you. We've gotten great emails with great questions, and we've tried to craft a few shows around some of those questions, including next week we're going to kind of do part two of where do I get started when it comes to building a plan, building an investment strategy, and just starting to sock away that nest egg so you can live your financial dreams.
I mean, the one question we get repeatedly is people are asking, saying, you know, well, I listen to your show, but it just seems like, you know, you need to have a lot of money to listen because the advice you're giving seems like I'm never there and I don't have what it takes to really have a portfolio. And I mean, that's not really the case, to be honest. You've got to start somewhere. You've got to make a start. And while you're making that start, if you can get educated along the way, and that's what we're trying to do, is just educate people as to the pitfalls, what to look for, how to make certain that you protect that nest egg, and then you can watch it grow, and over the years, you can have something substantial when you retire.
Right. The key, we talk about this over and over, the key is get that money working for you and let the power of compounding really work for you.
Right. Well, the other interesting thing is, you know, people say, I don't have a portfolio. Well, then you actually try and explain to them, well, you sort of do. It's not a traditional one, maybe, but you've got a house, possibly. And if you don't have a house, you know, you've still got cars and antiques or furniture or bits and pieces or maybe a few stamps worth a few dollars.
Baseball card collection from your youth.
Exactly. Or whatever it is. I mean, you've got a portfolio. You know, and it's now just time to, you don't necessarily have to have a portfolio of stocks, bonds, and, you know, and properties.
And that's a big part of why we're doing this show is to help you understand that just because that's probably one of the most widely talked about subjects in the world of media, that doesn't mean you have to be part of it. There's a lot of people that have lost a lot of money because they didn't understand what they were doing and they got in because they listened to Cramer and he told them this is a stock and he had bells and whistles and clown nose and clown shoes on that day and it sounded very interesting and you went out and bought it and next thing you know you lost everything you had because it was bad advice. You don't need to do that. You don't need to follow what the media is saying, must own, must do, must have.
Right. Well, it's all hype. I mean, you know, I remember a couple once they said they didn't have a portfolio and you know, I asked them, and turns out they did have about 20 grand or 25 grand, and they didn't know what to do with it. And they love to buy old cars and fix them up and sell them. I'm like, well, why don't you take the 25 grand and, you know, do that? Mm-hmm. Buy three more cars. And, oh, that was a great idea. And they started making a decent amount of money on that because they knew that industry and business backwards. Mm-hmm. It was a part-time thing they could do on the weekends, and it wasn't like they were in a rush. And next thing you knew, the 25 was growing. And that's what we're here to do, right? Just make that $25 or $10 or $5,000 or whatever it is grow. And it doesn't really matter how. You don't have to own the next hot stock on the market to be able to make it get bigger.
Right. Like one of the biggest group of people that are on Derek's show, on Mr. Credit Show, are realtors. And I've talked to numerous ones, and we discuss the different things they're interested in, and they know real estate. And that's another avenue. You can just build a portfolio of real estate. Start small, buy a rental property, let that cash flow, and let that buy your second one, and just slowly leverage that and grow it out. And next thing you know, you've got four or five properties that are paying you income, and you're kind of making your own pension right there.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. And then the other side of it is, if you have a smaller portfolio, this idea of complete diversification just doesn't make sense. I mean, if you've got a portfolio of less than 100 grand, I mean, maybe 100 is too big a number, maybe it's 50 grand. But at some point in time, the size of the portfolio dictates how diverse you need to be.
Right.
Because this point is taking 20 grand, splitting it into 10 different things just to diversify. That's $2,000 in each. It's not going to get you anywhere. At 20 grand, I'm sure you're an expert in one area. You know something more than other people know, right?
Or just there's something you're interested in more.
Exactly right. Or maybe it's just take that money and go and to put it towards education or something right. to get a better skill to be able to earn more money at work so you can earn more money and put that extra cash flow into a bigger pot so you end up with a, you know, bigger retirement piece.
Correct. And with that, there's pretty interesting, I wouldn't call it a phenomenon. It happens every so many years. There's some new hot item that comes out. And, of course, what's one of the biggest topics on the table these days?
You couldn't help yourself, could you?
I couldn't. This is going to lead perfectly into be careful out there. There was an interesting article in Forbes called Inside the Pot Stock Bubble.
Right.
And they really address the trend now that states are slowly coming on board and saying pot is legal. Marijuana usage is going to be legal. And it looks like, whether you like it or not, I would assume in the next 5 years, maybe 10 years, it's pretty well going to be universally accepted across the country as a legal recreational use. Maybe I'm wrong, but it sure seems like the writing's on the wall that that's where it's headed. And with that, obviously, there are a lot of companies that are going to try to capitalize on that and take advantage of this newfound market. And the issue that's going on right now is there's a rush to try to buy any and every company that's out there publicly traded that's involved in the cannabis or marijuana industry.
Right.
And what's the average price per share on any of those?
Like 15 cents or something.
I'm not sure if it's even that high. But that really opens up anyone who has seen the movie The Wolf of Wall Street or Boiler Room. That's what these companies are. It's really unregulated when there's these companies that are trading at 10 or 20 cents a share. And these guys just call and tell you, this is the industry, this is the best play, you got to buy this, just because they already own it at 3 cents. And if they can get so many people to buy it, the stock price goes up to a dollar. They sell out, they make a boatload, and the next thing you know, it goes back down to 3 cents before you as the investor had the chance to get out, and now your money's gone and it's never coming back.
There will be some winners in that industry, I've got to believe. It'll probably be Philip Morris.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, it's really hard. That is the problem with hyping these things. That said, you can find companies in that space that really are proper value plays where you can buy in and you can make your 5 grand turn into 50,000 pretty quick. But as you say, the amount of times that actually happens versus the amount of times it jumps up a little and then just goes to nothing, it's 3 cents for a reason normally.
Or even 20 cents. You look at the history and it's been out for years and it's 25 cents is its high. Is that legitimate growth or is that just a little bit of hype running up because people don't want to miss out? And then next thing you know, it's going to be
back. Well, also you get traders out there that'll trade. You know, I remember when I was very active at trading, I'd trade those every now and again just for fun. It'd be like 10 in the morning. I'd be bored. I'd find some penny stock and buy a whole bunch of stairs and start getting it moving and then wait and see if I could get any momentum generated. And as the thing would start taking off, I'd start selling into the market again and try and make a few bucks. But, right. I mean, you know, so you got to be very wary of these plays.
Yeah, those are probably more manipulated than you could manipulate, well,
they're pretty
say, an
easy
IBM
to
or
manipulate.
An Apple. Right.
And also, if you think about a 3-cent stock, you buy it, and if you can drive that thing to 6 or 7 cents, you've doubled your money, mm-hmm. right?
And granted, you're not going to be able to invest $100,000 into a 3-cent stock without making the price
exactly.
go flying off the charts.
But that's the whole point. If you're sitting on a portfolio of, let's say, $500,000 and you take 10 grand and you mess with a stock for a while, you could potentially double it, right? And then get out of there. And mm-hmm. if it goes to half, didn't really matter, but it was fun while it lasted.
Right. Yeah, because you're starting. That would definitely be your fun gambling money that
right.
you understand. Just like when you go to Vegas, you put whatever you can afford to lose in your pocket, and that's the only money you're going to use,
right.
knowing that more than likely you're going to walk out of there without that money.
Right.
If you go in with that mentality, you're probably not going to get burned as long as you don't try to hit the home run every time,
because exactly right.
that is really gambling. Although
that's exactly what it is. That, I mean, seriously, that is gambling. It's not done on fundamentals. It's not done on the company outlook. It's not done on anything. You're just taking a ticker symbol, which essentially could be a chip on a roulette wheel, and you're really just playing that number, mm-hmm. and you hope that it hits. And so a lot of times, the people trading those stocks, they know the ticker symbol, but they don't know one other thing about the stock.
Right. Maybe don't even know what the company does.
No idea. They're doing is looking at a line on a graph. And right. saying, this is pointing in whatever direction I'm going, long or short, and I'm going to try and just mess around with it.
Make it accelerate yeah. whichever way it is.
Yep. So. And it's hard to do. You can't do that on a Microsoft or something where it's trading, you know, 20, 30, 50 billion shares a day or whatever it is. You know, you can only do it on these little, tiny
right.
little things.
A lot of the time you see one of these, even at these low prices, and they trade 12,000 shares a day.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do there?
Exactly. Right.
Well, that about wraps it up today. All I have to say is the Padres better win today since they're getting us out of here early. You've been listening to The Portfolio Doctors. I am Dan Osgood.
I'm Steve Bick.
We will be back next week. Have a great weekend, everyone, and good luck, Padres.
You've been listening to The Portfolio Doctors on ESPN 1700. To schedule a financial health check, go to theportfoliodoctors.com. Or to speak with Dan Osgood, Steve Bick, or any guests on this program, call 858-764-7250. That's 858-764-7250, or go online at theportfoliodoctors.com. That's theportfoliodoctors.com. The Portfolio Doctors are Dan Osgood and Stephen Bick, who are investment advisor representatives of their respective registered investment advisor firms, ACAS LLC and Cottingham Management Company LLC. The opinions expressed by the Portfolio Doctors and guests on this radio show are their own and do not reflect the opinions of this radio station. All statements and opinions expressed are based upon information considered reliable, although it should not be relied upon as such. Any statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information presented is for educational purposes only. Moreover, no listener should assume that any discussions or information presented serves as the recipient of or a substitute for personalized advice from ACAS LLC, Cottingham Management LLC, or from any other investment professional and is not intended as an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. ACAS LLC and Cottingham Management LLC are not law or accounting firms, and no portion of this presentation should be interpreted as legal, accounting, or tax advice. Information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for any listener. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation.
All right. Well,
we're back.
Welcome back. Apparently, the Padres took our message and determined what we had to offer was more important than their pregame show.
Now, that is funny. Don't you think I think we've got clout now.
I think we do. I'm feeling a little more mighty today than I did
the power
before
that we have existing now.
I had my head hung low when I was walking in the studio knowing that we were getting booted early.
Well, that's the good news. The bad news is we prepared for half an hour show, so now we're going to have to wing it big
time. It's going to be the best of Dan and Steve unplugged.
Yeah, that's it. Unplugged, wasn't that?
Unplugged.
Thing of, what's it? The MTV Unplugged.
Yes, MTV Unplugged. That's right.
Oh, well, there we go. So we were talking about penny stocks when we left.
We were, and the craze towards the pot stocks as the
leader. Well, let's just talk about bubbles for a second, mm-hmm. because essentially that was where you were going with it.
Right.
You were saying, look, these could be a little bit of a bubble and don't get invested in a bubble. And we've seen the bubbles before. And it's funny because our Federal Reserve Chairman from years ago, Mr. Greenspan, when he was asked by Congress as to, Mr. Chairman, can't you, you know, see a bubble? And he fervently said, "You only time you know a bubble existed is once it's happened." Okay. Right. Well, I disagree pretty strongly with that. I mean, there's a lot of signs. I'm sorry, when you've got people who shouldn't qualify for a house getting anything mm-hmm. they want, and on top of that, banks lending 125% of the equity of the house, expecting the house to continue to rise in price so they get covered later. There's that. It's the writing is on the wall. It's pretty blaster clear.
Now, is it getting clearer because of what happened in 2000 with the tech bubble, and then the housing bubble, and then what's next? So people are becoming more aware and trying to.
Maybe. I mean, that is a good point. And to that point, if you think about it, back in 1998, it was one of the first times that we really started this whole money printing stimulus thing. Mm-hmm. And since that started, instead of smoothing out volatility, instead of making the markets, you know, a safer place to invest, instead of protecting the consumer, instead of making our economy just slowly chug along at 3 to 5% growth each year, it's done anything but that. Well, we've seen the 2000 bubble, we saw the 2007 bubble, it looks like we're entering a new one right now. And as soon as you stick your fingers into the pie like the Fed's doing, and you're creating a bigger and bigger problem, you're going to have a bigger and bigger bubble that's going to burst.
Right.
So that is, while the idea was to try and mellow everything, it went the complete other way.
Well, it's because they're flowing the money to the wrong direction. If instead of putting that money into buying all these bonds, they would just be giving that money to the general population.
Yeah, imagine if they took $3 trillion and just sent everyone checks.
It would be a pretty interesting. We would have such a booming economy right now.
Well, what's there? 300 million Americans, right? So if they gave a dollar, that would be 300 million. So $10 would be 3 billion, right? Mm-hmm. $100 is 300 billion. No, 30 billion. $1,000 is 300, right? So we're getting $10,000 a man, woman, and child.
Yeah.
$10,000. So if you've got a family of five, you, your wife or your husband, and three kids, you're getting $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And it was proven back in Bush's years.
He only gave $800.
On the highest end, most people got just a couple hundred dollars.
Yeah.
But that was enough that started the economy going.
$50,000 each. That's a down payment for a house. And in fact, in parts of the country, that is the house.
Right. Or two.
You've got a house free and clear. Mm-hmm. Now that's stimulus.
Right.
Absolutely. So now so then you go, let's just cross the channel, right, to China. Or not the channel, the Pacific.
It's a big ocean.
It's quite a big channel.
It's a long swim.
Yeah, exactly. But so you go across to China. And there's a lot of talk of there being a bubble over there. Okay, well, in the past, the 30 years, the Chinese have grown, the economy's grown about 8% year over year. Very easy. I mean, goodness, if we could get half of that, we'd be flying over here. So they're doing 8. Now, when we all went down there, when I say we, I'm talking about Europe, the United States and all that, they managed to maintain because for the first time, they really started pumping a lot of money into the economy. Right. And so it had that same impact as Greenspan had, mm-hmm. where he went in there and he dumped a lot of money in initially. His initial stimulus was only like 30, 40 billion and it had a huge impact.
Right.
Right. Well, that's sort of the same impact the Chinese originally had. So they managed to sail through 2008 and 2009 and carried on growing at 9-10%. And it was the wonder economy and the miracle economy in this. But the problem is, they were stimulating with debt, just like we've been doing. Now, the idea is that over time, the global economy returns. All of this money they're pumping into infrastructure and that comes back to them in droves because they can then benefit from all that work. But the problem is they've now got 20, almost 30 billion square foot of real estate that's vacant. and they're building another 1.5 billion square feet this year.
So that's the opposite of a bubble. That's a
that's a
pit that they're digging.
Well, yeah. But then they've got they've only consumed 60% of all the concrete or cement that they made in the last 5 years. They've only used 60%. So they've got this massive pile of
the rest.
Steel. They're making more steel than the next seven producers combined.
Wow.
So,
well, stick around for more of the Portfolio Doctors Unplugged live and in studio.
There you go.
Welcome back. It is the Portfolio Doctors live in studio.
Real live. Unplugged.
Real live.
Not only just live, but unplugged.
Unplugged, unprepared for this extra half hour, but we're glad to be able to stick around and talk with you a little longer.
We were talking about a bubble. So
bubbles.
Let me just go back to...
We're not talking about double bubble bubble gum or
no, exactly. We're talking about bubbles in terms of so I was talking about China and talking about the excess steel capacity they've got and the excess cement they've produced and the excess real estate they've got lying around the place. And the only reason I bring all that up is they might not, you know, there's argument, are they in a bubble, are they not in a bubble? I mean, those are pretty clear signals, as far as I can tell, that they're in a bubble. I mean, you know, there's certain things you can look at. It's not too hard to see. If you're sitting on 30 billion square feet of real estate that you've built from the ground up and they're lying vacant, I mean, that's cities, basically, of people that are just sitting there vacant. I mean, as you say, someone's going to catch that, you know. They're digging a hole to some degree, but in a way that if you go back to the way, way back, when they did the new plan, right, for here, and they at some point they needed to be in the Great Depression. They just sent the guys out, and they made them dig holes and fill them up the next day, and they just to get people working. And that's sort of the same mantra that China's had. The problem is it hasn't worked because the rest of the world is still has not recovered.
Right, global difficulties.
So that's where they're running themselves into problems. And it's relatively easy to see that they've got on the horizon – some issues.
A bubble.
Well, the problem with it is if it is a bubble and it does burst, they're going to need money. And who has a big chunk of that money? We do.
Right.
And if they want it back, we're now going to have to. There goes another $1 trillion.
Right. Liquidate all the bonds.
Yeah. Well, not liquidate. We'll probably just print more money. You know?
Just send them a check.
Exactly. Which is almost counterproductive because if we did that, then the U.S. dollar gets weaker. The renminbi is already up 20-30%, I think, over the last couple of years, which is one of the reasons why they're struggling. Their labor costs are going up. Their currency is getting stronger. I mean, it's finally getting back to some kind of normality there, but it means their exports are weaker, makes our exports to them stronger. So they've got now a problem that we're dealing with.
Right.
But it has to change because you can't be a debtor nation forever like we are. At some point, you have to pay it back. Mm-hmm. And the way that you do that is you lower your currency to a point where you become more competitive.
So would this not kind of be self-fulfilling then? If in fact we have to pay China back, that's going to accomplish that. It's going to push the value of our currency down.
Well, you'd think.
Although
the problem is that everyone's trying to push their currency down right now.
But this would be an unavoidable, no matter that everyone else is, if we have to have this huge outflow of cash – that's just going to start squashing the value of our currency.
Yeah, and I mean, it's funny because obviously if you're in China, you're going, well, this isn't fair because I gave you $1 trillion. Back then it was worth, you know, $1 trillion. Well, yeah, but it was worth, let's say, 10 trillion renminbi. And now you're sending me back 10 years later, 5 trillion renminbi, which is half because the currency's moved. I mean, and then, of course, the United States goes, well, you wouldn't have had that trillion if we hadn't bought all of the junk or whatever it is that we are importing from you. You know, right. I won't say it's all junk because, you know, but, that you know, all the stuff we brought in because of your low wages and we basically helped you get to where you got to by through the import. So that's where you get into these trade disputes.
Right. And pretty much across the history of the world in importing and exporting, that just is part of the business aspect of it. It's going to happen. There's nothing you can do about it because one economy is always going to do a little bit better or a little bit worse than the other, and it's going to cause these imbalances that eventually try to balance back out.
Yeah, but you see, once again, then the government step in and try and fix the situation. Right. And then you end up in it with problems.
But governments are proving pretty well that they're very efficient at making everything run perfectly and smoothly. No problems at all,
goodness.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. You just leave it up to them. And that's the problem. And that's really the thesis of this whole show is if you're relying on the government and the Social Security for your retirement and your benefits, then you know you might want to think a little bit more clearly. Right. And realize that their ownership is focused is right on your shoulders, and you'd better take responsibility and learn from us and hopefully have a good retirement.
Right. Definitely take control of your own situation. Don't rely on anyone else, because anyone who's ever dealt with other people, they realize once you put your fortune or your hands in someone else's control, you're running the big risk that their interests are not quite aligned with yours, and it can be very negative.
Yeah, and just to go a bit further, obviously we're not saying don't use a professional. I mean, we're saying do use a professional to many regards, but just know what to look for when you're looking at investments. When a professional presents things to you, like I do to various of my investors and that, you know, I try to do the best I can to make sure that they're putting what they need into the right position and the right investment. But a lot of people don't do that.
Right. The right strategy for your own unique situation.
Correct.
And that's one of the biggest points we're trying to get across is whoever's listening, you have your own unique set of goals, ideas that you want to accomplish in life that is very different from your neighbor, from your other family members, from the people talking on TV. And you need to build something based on what you want to do, not what you think everyone else is supposed to do or what you're supposed to do because Kramer on TV is telling you have to buy this stock and it doesn't fit with what you're trying to accomplish.
No, exactly.
It's very important to understand that your own goals are yours. They're not the same as anyone else's. So you shouldn't do what everyone else does just because that's
what I don't know. Everyone's goal is ultimately, I would think, the same. Make get more money, right?
Right. But that's a big blanket goal. There's many smaller
how you get
underlying
there,
goals.
Exactly right. And what that number is also different, right?
Right.
But ultimately, all you want to do is have a nice, comfortable retirement.
Right. And that's what we've talked about. Like you said, you think $25,000 a month in income in retirement is what you want to shoot for, where plenty of other people may have no mortgage, may have a house they want to live in for the rest of life, and they maybe only need $1,000 or $2,000 a month for their retirement.
No, exactly.
And that looks very, very different and allows you more freedoms now while you're working. Maybe you can go on every trip you want to now if you're not going to need as much in retirement, or maybe you put those trips off for a couple of years if you want more in retirement. So there's a lot of simple answers to those types of questions.
Exactly right. And you just have to learn. You spend years and months of your life learning how to operate your crane or work at your job or do whatever else it is that you do. Go and learn how to surf or whatever you do.
Right.
And no one spends, well, a lot of people, they spend no time on one of the most important parts of their existence, which is how to invest money.
Right. Or how to budget, how to plan for goals in any manner. It's very, very important to educate yourself, whether it's working with professionals. If there's anything when you are researching, if you're trying to look up something or you have any questions about any aspect of the financial markets, finances, budgeting, goal setting, whatever it is, definitely reach out to us. We're here to answer any questions and give you any guidance we can. You can reach me directly, Dan at the Portfolio Doctors, or Steve at the Portfolio Doctors.com, of course. Mm-hmm. And our website is theportfoliodoctors.com, which you can just log on, and we've got old podcasts available there. Also, we are available on iTunes, so you can download our podcasts. And if there's something we're talking about that this is the first time you're listening, you say, wow, these guys seem like they're giving us good information. I'm curious to see what else they've talked about. All those podcasts are available and labeled, so you have an idea what we've talked about.
Yeah, no, exactly right. I mean, and you know, I think next week we're going to talk about a recap, you know, to try and see what we've done in the past, just to give people an understanding of, you know, where we've come from, what we think, why. And, you know, that might be helpful as well for people that tune in next Friday and just get an understanding of where we've been.
Well, absolutely. We're going to do that because, again, that's been the most common emailed question is, how do I get started? Once we had that the first show that touched on that subject, we've gotten a lot of interest there. And I understand that. I've seen that question throughout my career of people come to me and they say, oh, I know I need to do something, but how do I do it? How do I get started?
Right.
And it's not as complicated as you think. It's actually very simple. In this day and age, it's so easy to set up an automatic withdrawal or deposit setup to start putting money aside to accomplish your first goal, whatever that may be. So,
yeah. Yeah, so there you go. So this has been live and uncensored.
Live and uncensored. Well, probably a little bit censored. We're still on the radio. They haven't shut the lines off. Well, thank you very much for listening. We're sorry the Padres couldn't preempt us, but we're glad we could stick around and give you a little more information. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your weekend.
ESPN 1700. To schedule a financial health check, go to theportfoliodoctors.com, or to speak with Dan Osgood, Steve Bick, or any guests on this program, call 858-764-7250. That's 858-764-7250, or go online at theportfoliodoctors.com. That's theportfoliodoctors.com.